Hey everyone, it's Colin. How's it going? So, creativity. It kind of sucks, right? Like, if you've ever done any kind of creative work, especially on a consistent-ish basis, you probably are very familiar with the fact that it's not just a thing you can force yourself into doing, right? You can't just wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to get this creative thing done today and just do it. It's going to be very dependent on your mood and what else is going on in your life and where even just kind of your head is at related to that creative project. And now more than ever is a time that I'm finding it really frustrating for all that, you know, to be the case. You can't just force yourself to do creative work, at least not if you want to be happy with the results that you get. It's a very strange sensation where it just kind of hits you, right? Like you could be working on something or just hanging out, and suddenly you just get the urge to finally work on that project that you'd been putting off. And you get a flurry of work done in a relatively short amount of time because you're, you know, in the zone, or however you want to phrase it, right? You finally got everything to kind of click in your head, and you just get it done, and you're happy with the results. And then some time goes by, and you get another idea for another creative project, but maybe at the time, while it's a good idea, it's just not something you're interested in working on, you know? So you kind of keep percolating in your head as to how that would, you know, take form and all the details and everything. And it just continues on from there. And other times you get an idea and it just hits you and you suddenly get the desire to do that video or that creative work. And it just gets all done in a hurry. You know, you hit the idea and the execution all just in one shot. And that's kind of where I've been lately. You know, it used to be, strangely enough, a lot more consistent for me to create content where I could look out, you know, weeks and months ahead of time and not necessarily firmly schedule what I was going to do when, but have a better plan as to, okay, this week it's going to be a video about this and next week it's going to be a video about that and that sort of thing. And it was really easy to be in kind of this consistent schedule as to, you know, okay, tonight I'm going to work on the script and tomorrow night I'm going to work on, you know, pulling graphics together. And the day after that, I'm going to shoot video. And, you know, you can kind of get in this groove of creative work, right? What's very strange for me is lately that's just completely broken. And actually, honestly, it's been broken like that for probably the last couple of years, but I'm really feeling it the most now, where I've got a bunch of projects that are rattling around in my head or sitting on the floor here in the home office, just staring at me, waiting for me to tackle them. But I just can't bring myself to do them yet, or I can't bring myself to get to the next step. Like, you know, that mini disc documentary that had been in progress for several years. Like, I had written the script for that years prior to when that video came out. But it was really the looming deadline of Minidisc Day that kicked me in the ass to finally finish that video. You know, I'd been working on it kind of half-heartedly over the last few years. You know, occasional tweaks to the script. And, you know, every once in a while I'd find some new material, you know, a new magazine article or a photo, or I'd shoot a little bit of footage or whatever to slowly kind of assemble the thing. But I had about a 1 month deadline to actually get that documentary finished. And I just decided if I didn't do it then, if I didn't have that video out in time for Minidisc Day 2021, then I'd probably never get it done. Right? Because if I wasn't willing to commit to something that was a month away, then there's no chance that I would have been able to do it the next year. I would have found another excuse, you know, that sort of thing. But other than that, you know, it's been really kind of tough to, I guess, get myself in the right mindset to tackle more of, especially those bigger videos. But I'm finding it even on smaller videos now, like that Perform a 400 inbox video was one of those really good examples of just, I got this idea and suddenly executed on it. And to be transparent to y'all, that week when that video came out, I was not planning on releasing a video that week. I was planning on taking that week off, which is another thing that I've been doing. I don't want to say more frequently lately, but it's something I've been more receptive to doing, is occasionally taking a week off. And I'm conflicted in my feelings about doing that as well, right? Like, I know the best advice that anyone can really ever get when you're trying to build a YouTube channel and maintain it and grow it and all that is to create, is to like consistently create content, to come out with videos on a relatively frequent schedule, if not a fixed schedule, just so that people want to keep coming back. And apparently the algorithm plays into this as well. If you've ever been like subscribed to a YouTuber and suddenly notice that on the subscriptions page for YouTube, you haven't seen videos from them for a while, but you actually check their channel and they've still been creating content. Apparently it all like factors into that too. And I've seen that in comments where people have said, oh wow, I used to watch your videos and I'm subscribed and I thought you had taken a long break. You know, suddenly they're showing up in my subscriptions feed again. You know, it's like, no, I've been creating videos the entire time. It's just YouTube hasn't been alerting people to them. And I'm worried about causing more of that to happen by taking a week off here and there. But at the same time, I know other YouTubers are doing the same thing, if not starting to do it more often. Even Clint, LGR, has kind of gotten to a point where he's taking 1 week off every month, where he's kind of doing like a 3 episodes every month type of schedule instead of consistently, you know, once a week. And I'm trying not to fall necessarily into that, but I don't think it's going to hurt me too much if I take the occasional week off. So like this week, I'm taking this week off, and there's a very good reason for that. I've just had a lot going on in my life. Lots of stuff related to work and events that my wife and I had planned, you know, quite a while out, and the timing just doesn't work out. So, you know, this week, no episode. But while I'm sitting here thinking about, okay, what video do I want to make for next week's episode, I'm finding myself kind of shooting down a lot of the ideas. And ultimately, I'll just buckle down and pick one and do it. And it'll be one of those more kind of casual conversational kind of videos, which I'm surprised to learn people actually do seem to like, as much as some vocal minority of people complain that I just talk too much or whatever in those episodes. And the last one that I did where I asked people, you know, do you like this kind of content where we're just kind of hanging out and I'm talking about stuff and showing you what I'm doing in the video. Actually, a lot of people seem to like it. They like the longer ones. So it's reassuring to know that in between those bigger project videos, I don't want to call them filler episodes because I try not to create any kind of filler content. I think of them as just, I guess, a bit less structured. I still try to put really useful information in all of those videos, but just not with the full scripted, you know, narration, lots of B-roll kind of way, right? It's the, I guess, as people like to complain, the me waving my hands around a lot kind of videos, you know, where you just see my hands on the object I'm working on. So fair warning, it's going to be one of those probably next week. But I'm also looking, because, you know, that's kind of what I do in these podcast episodes, I'm looking a bit bigger picture as to, like, why am I heading in that direction? I used to be so heavy into fully scripting everything that I possibly could and as much polish as I could on these episodes. Why am I kind of leaning back a little bit? And I think a lot of it kind of comes down to that whole creativity thing. You know, where you get to a point where you're just kind of exhausted of not necessarily the work, but the daunting nature of all of it. You know, you look at what goes into any piece of creative work, really. It's not just video editing, although video editing is probably some of the heavier stuff that you could be doing. But, you know, any piece of creative work, if you're a musician, like, you know, creating a song, creating an album, right? you look at it like, okay, well, I've written one song, but I still need to record it. And it's going to go on an album, and I only have one song, and albums need to have like 10 songs. So I have to write 9 more songs, and I have to record those, and then I have to mix the whole thing, right? It's like, you know, you look like, even if you've gotten one or two steps in, you just kind of continue to see this big mountain in front of you of work. And I feel like I've just kind of been going through the foothills for a while, and I've got a bunch of these big mountains in front of me, and I'm not really climbing up them so much, because that mini disc episode, you know, that doc was a big climb. I kind of feel like I climbed Mount Everest for that one, but I know that I've got more of those on the horizon, and it's going to be great when they're done. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I don't want to create that content. There's one that I've been working on for 9 months that I actually feel really bad that I haven't finished, because it's something that's on loan from someone else. Thankfully, they're not in a hurry, and they actually approached me to have this, you know, this episode get created because they wanted to see it eventually make its way out into the world. And I'm really excited for it, but it's daunting. Maybe because in that particular episode's case, it's like a very unique thing that is just not on YouTube. And I can't just show it and be done. There's a journey involved in getting that thing working again. And then there's a whole lot of backstory that needs to be explained in order to fully flesh out, you know, like the context of where this device fit in, why it was the big deal that it was, and, you know, the history and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm feeling like with a lot of these projects that I'm taking on, the responsibility is higher, for better or for worse. Now, I'm definitely grateful in some ways for that position, right? It's strange to be grateful to have more work to do, to have a higher level of responsibility. You know, some days I look at YouTube channels that have way bigger engagement, way larger subscribers, way more views and all that kind of stuff. And they're the kind of people who are just running around and filming like their everyday life with a GoPro. You know, it's very relatively small amount of production work that goes into that content versus what I do. But at the same time, I think it's really just kind of shifting where the work is, right? You notice with those people where the production quality is generally lower, they're shot more quickly, it's more of a vlog kind of a thing, they have to do it a lot more frequently. So I imagine they've got kind of this same burnout type of thing going on where it's like, oh geez, I've already done 3 episodes this week. I really have to do a 4th one. And you know, it's like, it's not just planning week to week. It's you're planning day by day. I don't think you could do that if you didn't devote yourself full time to it. Whereas thankfully, at least, you know, in my situation, most of my videos, not all of them, but most of them are, let's just say, compact enough where, you know, in terms of runtime and detail, where I can manage to, in general, get one done every week while still juggling, you know, life and work and other responsibilities and whatnot. I also don't want to dismiss just overall stress and one's handling of stress from why I'm kind of feeling like just kind of blah, I guess. You know, the last 18 months, we've all been through just a lot of crap, right? Like, no matter where you are in the world, for one reason or another, you're probably feeling pretty stressed. You're probably feeling pretty tired. And we all handle stress in different ways. You know, a year ago, if you had asked me, Colin, how are you going to handle all of these changes, all these stressful events, the constant deluge of bad news, and people behaving badly, and, you know, just one thing after another, I'd initially say, well, you know, I'm probably just going to focus on YouTube as a diversion, right? As a way to keep my mind off of the rest of life and how we're dealing with it or not dealing with it or whatever. But that's really not what's happened. I figured, you know, I would just be just a video powerhouse by now, right? You know, a year plus after switching to full-time work from home and dealing with all the stress of the various, you know, current events, I figured, you know, I would have gotten through all that backlog of those, you know, mountain videos where it just takes a ton of work. But in some ways, it's actually gotten worse. And what I'm finding myself doing is I'm not just sitting and like not doing anything, right? I'm still trying to be productive because that's just the way my mind works. I need to have something to do. But I'm finding myself doing other stuff. And a lot of it, interestingly enough, involves Free Geek Twin Cities. I've gotten more involved over there. You know, it used to be just I would occasionally show up and kind of film what's going on and that's it. But now I'm at the point where I'm volunteering on a semi-regular basis. They reopened, you know, just kind of in the spring after they were finally able to make the building, you know, the layout. You saw that episode where they redid the store and everything. You know, they were finally able to reopen to the public because it's safe for social distancing and whatnot. But because they had been closed for so long, they lost a lot of volunteers. And so I kind of helped fill in the gap. And I'm finding myself a little bit more involved in what goes on out there, which is definitely a win-win. I mean, it helps them out because now they've got someone knowledgeable in things like, you know, fixing up older Macs and newer Macs and retro computers in general. To helping get that work done. And for me, it's a big benefit because one, it's kind of a stress relief. It's, I don't want to call it mindless work, but when I do go in there and spend an afternoon volunteering, like on a weekend, it's a time when I can just do something without any other pretense, right? Like what you've seen from me so far in terms of working on retro tech has always been through the lens of the camera. I only spend about 30% of the time on any episode like that, actually doing the work that you see on camera. So I may have a project where it's like, well, I've got this old thing. Let's say it's an old laptop and I want to fix it up. You know, it needs a few replacement parts or, you know, the plastics are cracked or whatever. You know, you may look at that initially as just being, okay, well, here's what I need to do to fix that device up. But then I'm like, well, okay, but if I'm going to do it for a video, now I need to write a script and shoot the footage and edit and all that kind of stuff. And it just suddenly becomes a much bigger thing than what the actual task is. What's nice about volunteering at Free Geek, at least for me, is I'm not expecting myself to produce a video about every single thing I do out there. Nor will I do that because I think people would just get really tired of that. I totally realize I'm just rambling on here. And I started this episode with like this overarching idea about talking with creativity and how everyone approaches it differently and where the channel's been heading, kind of turning it into a channel update. And I'm just prattling on instead, which hopefully has been at least comprehensible to you as I've been going through and doing it. But I want to keep creating as best content that I can, but I'm limited by my own ability and my own drive to do so. And I'm not going to give up, and I'm not going to settle for substandard content, right? I'm not going to release an episode if I don't believe in it, which is why I'm a little bit kind of agonizing about what video you're going to get for next week, right? It's going to be probably between one of two topics, depending on how good I feel about ultimately what happens. And chances are, knowing me, I'm probably just going to film both of them and edit the one that I'm feeling more confident about. And then the other one will just go in the scrap bin, or maybe I'll edit it as well and you'll get a bonus episode. I've done that occasionally before where I've produced an episode that in the end I just didn't really like very much. And when I've posted it for Patreons to take a look at and ask their opinion, they basically confirmed, yeah, this wasn't a very good one, which I'm thankful for. I'm actually really thankful to have kind of a, I don't want to say private, but limited audience that I can confer in like this, right? It's a nice bit of kind of sanity checking where otherwise it's just kind of me and assuming that something may work or may not work in terms of a topic or the way I present something. It's really nice to have you as that bit of sanity checking. So there may be a little bit more of that upcoming with some future episodes. until I can get to a point where, you know, stress from work and stress from life kind of come down a little bit more and I can get back into that creative workflow again. It's going to be not, you know, slap together episodes, but here's an example. Last week's episode about the OLPC, the X01. If I was firing on all cylinders, so to say, that would have been its own giant documentary, right? Because I focused mostly on the hardware of that particular laptop in that episode. But there's a huge story behind it about the OLPC Foundation in general and how it got started and all the kind of trials and tribulations that it went through bringing its products to market. There's an entire subplot there about how Intel had been a member of the OLPC Foundation, right? A company that was willing to donate money and product and parts and all that kind of stuff to help the cause. And ultimately, with the whole falling out of Microsoft, you know, initially wanting to help support it, and then when they realize that no, OLCP people really are serious about this being open source, and then Microsoft, you know, deciding to back away from it, Microsoft did this thing with Intel, and that's where this kind of competitor to the OLPC called the Classmate PC came out. Like, this is an entire subplot that I could have gotten into, but I just didn't feel it. I really just didn't feel it. That would have been a lot more work and a lot more research. And at the same time, and this is another big battle that I have with myself, is how much of other people's work am I willing to duplicate? Right? Am I willing to create another version of a video that someone else has already done, or just some other kind of content? And that's why in that OLPC episode, I decided, you know what, I'm just going to focus on the hardware and give some backstory on this project, but not go into the nitty gritty about, you know, the ups and downs of the whole thing and really kind of why it failed and all of that. There was an excellent book that had been written about OLPC and literally that whole story. So why would I do all of that? Why would I basically replicate what the book does when I could just say in the video, if you want more info about it, here's a thing that already exists that you can read and would give you even more detail than I could ever put in a video just because of time constraints, right? I'm not going to dedicate an entire series, you know, whatever the length of video would be equivalent to an entire book. Like, I'm not going to do that because that's way too much work than I would benefit from. And honestly, no one would watch that because suddenly, you know, my channel would become the OLPC History Channel, right? And I think in some ways that's something a lot of YouTube, you know, creators face, is finding that balance of how deep do you go into a topic versus how not deep do you go? Because everything needs to be somewhat bite-sized, right? The mini disc documentary was a very long episode compared to what I normally do. And the video length of my average episode is intentional. I try to stick between 10 and 15 minutes because any shorter than that, and I feel like I'm not doing the topic enough justice, but any longer than that, and I feel like I'm stretching it out, or people don't have enough attention span for it, which is a very frustrating thing as a creator to put a lot of work into an episode and to see that, you know, in the analytics, people are only watching like half of it or less. They're bailing out. And you wonder why. That mini disc doc, I was very surprised by that it got a, you know, like the reception that it got for as long of a video as that is, for it to have reached over 1 million views. Just blows my mind. I'm so thankful that that video actually did well for a change. Because that was a passion project, right? And what I've learned is more often than not, passion projects on YouTube generally don't really get rewarded. Sad to say. It's the videos that you don't put a ton of work into that tend to do the best. And speaking of the OLPC episode again, like I said, that was one that I could have gone a lot further into, but I intentionally kind of held myself back. That video is doing better than the average, right? As I'm recording right now, that thing is sitting at about 75,000 views, which is like double where one of my typical episodes would be, you know, this many days after it was released. So obviously something about that worked. And maybe that's something that can help me, you know, if I think about that more proactively, is every time I look at a topic and my mind starts to turn into the whole kind of, you know, writing the script in my head kind of mode. Oh, let's talk about this and let's talk about that. And oh, let's make sure we cover this angle and that angle and all that. It's kind of like almost every episode that I go into starts out as being that big mountain when it really just needs to be a hill. Maybe I need to be better at trying to knock those mountains down to, you know, be very specific when I leave the mountains as big as they are. It has to be worth it, right? The mountain has to be worth climbing in order for you to justify doing it. And maybe that's something that'll help. I'm not sure. It's an ongoing evolution, right? Even though I've been doing YouTube for, goodness, 7 years now, almost 7 years. I think I started in 2014. I'm still learning. Like every single episode, every single time, I'm learning, not just more about how I create episodes, but also how audiences are changing and the way YouTube works is changing. It's never really a point where you kind of get into the groove of creating and then you're just on autopilot from there. I am never on autopilot because it's just everything's constantly in flux. So, you know, you just adapt like any other kind of creative art, just as, you know, any other artistic medium adapts to the circumstances in which that art exists, right? With musicians, it's now streaming. And how do people listen to music on streaming? And how do you promote music for streaming and that sort of thing, right? That's a huge thing for musicians. So I don't think any creative art is kind of immune to this. It's all something that we have to deal. Obviously, being on the internet, it's going to be a lot faster paced, those changes, than physical media. But, you know, you adapt as best you can, and sometimes you've got periods where you're very productive, and sometimes you have periods where you're not. So if my episodes don't seem to be as deep as they usually are, or if I'm picking topics that I don't want to say are easy, but are not necessarily my normal subject matter, just understand that's just what was in my head at the time and what I had time to devote to. And, you know, I'll try to make everybody happy if I can, but I can't please everyone at the same time. If that makes sense. Anyway, one final little thing to get to kind of the channel update thing. And I'm not really ready to announce this worldwide or, you know, broadly yet. So let's keep this to ourselves. But one thing that I have been spending time on when I haven't been creating episodes that's still creative is something that's very new to me, and that is a physical release. If you follow the channel Retail Archaeology, Eric and I have very different topics, right? But we both kind of, I think, have a very similar background. He's also very big into video games, and I think that's how he followed my channel. And obviously, I'm into Vaporwave, and that's how I found his channel. Retail Archaeology is a YouTube channel all about basically dead malls. So there's a little bit, it's an interesting kind of combination of urban exploration plus history plus nostalgia, all rolled into one. His videos are very kind of casual. He just kind of walks around with a GoPro and shows you stuff and narrates over the top with lots of facts and other information about, you know, the mall that he's going through or the history of a particular retailer and that sort of thing. It's actually very well done. I enjoy his content quite a bit. And it's very chill. He's got a very laid back kind of feel to his channel, which is always really nice. But he recently announced that he's doing a VHS release. And so, yeah, I'm kind of doing the same thing. Actually, both of us were reached out to by the person that runs Pacific Plaza Records. They're a Vaporwave label, but they've also been getting into video releases a bit. And they decided to get a few YouTubers on board. I knew Pacific Plaza well from their Vaporwave releases, as did, you know, Eric from Retail Archaeology. And so they reached out to us and Do you want to do a thing? So Eric is doing kind of a, it's, I'm feeling kind of bad now with what I'm going to do compared to what he said he's going to do, but I think it's going to work out kind of even in the end. He's doing a new video, like all new content for his VHS release. And yes, it's coming out on an actual VHS cassette that you can buy and they'll mail you. But it's a bunch of footage that he had kind of previously shot and is compiling together. So I don't think it's a greatest hits kind of episode. I think it is a new thing. And he's talking about, it's got a cohesive topic and everything, but I don't think it's a brand new episode that he's actively gone out and got all new footage for. What I'm doing is the mini disc doc. I decided, you know what? This thing got such a good reception. And the topic, I think, fits the physical format really well, right? Because when minidisc was hot, what was the predominant video format? It was VHS. And so I decided, you know what? I'm just going to do the minidisc doc as a physical release. Now, I couldn't just take that episode and put it straight onto tape. So there is something in it for you if you decide to pick up this episode. It's been completely re-edited to fit the 4:3 aspect ratio, which was not an easy task. And then I realize, well, crap, I've got licensed music in this, right? All the background music is through a music licensing company that I pay. I reached out to the licensing company and I asked them, okay, so here's the deal, this VHS release, I'm already a subscriber for your music. Would my existing license cover 100 copies of this on VHS tape or what? And I don't think they've ever been asked that question before. And they replied back and they go, oh, well, we would need to set you up with a custom license to use our music in that way. And the minimum cost would be $1,000. And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm probably not even going to make $1,000 off the entire project. I'd probably lose money if I did that. So I'm like, oh, well, thanks, but no thanks. So now the episode not only has been completely re-edited to fit the 4:3 aspect ratio and look good, it's got all new music in it too. Thankfully, I was able to go through and work with a lot of vaporwave artists and other independent music creators that offer free licensing to come up with a soundtrack that I'm actually really happy with. And in some ways, I hate to say it, I kind of think the soundtrack for the VHS release is a little bit better than the one that went up on YouTube. But it's either here nor there. If you are interested in that, stay tuned. Again, I don't know how much it's going to cost. I don't want it to be priced like exorbitantly or anything. I'm thinking like max price on it's probably going to be $20 or something like that. I don't know how many copies are going to be sold or if they're going to do, like, if we sell out of the first run, we'll sell another run of it or not. There's a lot of unknowns. I also don't even know when it's going to come out. I'm not even sure when the retail archaeology video is going to drop. I know Eric has been teasing it. So I think his video was going to go first and then maybe mine's going to be a little bit later. So possibly like late October, but again, I don't know. A lot of that's still getting figured out, but that's something that I'm really excited about because physical stuff is something I haven't really done much with. I mean, I've had t-shirts available for literally years, but like nobody buys them. And other than, you know, I think there are literally four. This is not compute t-shirts out there in the world. Other than that, I did like one run of stickers, which I'll mail, you know, people if they send me stuff as a thank you. Other than that, I just haven't really done merch. So I'm cautiously optimistic about this VHS run because it's giving you a thing. It's not just merch with my logo on it, right? It's you're getting an actual tangible thing for your money that you can enjoy. And it's content that I'm really happy with. I'm really happy with how well that documentary worked out, not just in terms of its reception, but the actual content. I think it's one of my best episodes. And to be able to get it out there in physical format, you know, I guess it means something kind of beyond YouTube, right? It's a step towards other kinds of growth. And I don't know where it's going to lead. I don't know if I'm going to do more physical releases. I don't know if I'm going to do a Blu-ray box set one day or if there would even be demand for such a thing. But it's something I'm going to try, and I'm hoping that people are receptive to. Thank you, as always, for your support. And as always, thank you for listening.